Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
20 years ago, folklorist Michael Fortune, who's been in with us before, but Michael and his wife Aileen Lambert, they went to Limerick City and they recorded a collection of stories from primary school children on both sides of the River Shannon, and it was called The Banshee Lives in the Handball Alley. It's a bit like Give Up Your Old Sins, I suppose, in a sort of a young rubber bandit style. And Michael's going to be returning to Limerick this weekend for an anniversary screening of the film, and he's hoping many of the original children will come along to that, and we might be talking to some of them a little bit later on. But first, Michael Fortune, welcome back to us. Tell us a little bit about how you and were you married? Aileen Lambert is your worthy missus in the world. How you went about collecting these stories? You went out to three schools in Limerick.
Yeah, we did. I'd been working in that area, kind of collecting them. Still am, but that particular one was a great starting point for both of us. You know, we went down. It was the arts officer at the time, Sheila Deegan. We asked us down to do something for the Cushla Poetry Festival, and the idea was to go in, Oliver, and to work with young lads and make little films. But sure, as soon as we went in, the young lads started telling us stories. And as soon as they opened their mouth and told us the stories, we said, "Jesus, we do very little here now, just press record and the lads and we'll be away with it."
Yeah.
And so they were lovely natural storytellers, real confident, lovely gorgeous accents, and so the stories then grew and grew over the weeks we recorded.
And the schools were St Mary's Boys National School, St Mary's Girls National School. I think they're now combined even since you were there in 2005, and it's St Munchen's Boys National School as well. The stories were all scary.
We were surprised to find, you know yourself when you talk about kind of folklore, banshee stories and fairy stories, you'll expect them really, a kind of a country pursuit, you know, that kind of way. The country wants to believe all that kind of stuff. But for these young lads, were good working class, inner city young lads, you know. Yeah. They all had the stories passed down, let's say, from their mammies and daddies. Also as well, the transmission of stories, Oliver, was always brilliant, because I'd be up telling them, I'd be saying before we record, and God, I heard a story at home in Wexford, we had this. And next week I go back and young lad would say, "My uncle told me this, sir." And I said, "What was it?" And he'd tell me, I said, "I told you that last week." He said, "Oh, no, you didn't, sir. That was my uncle told me that one." So, and it's just, that's the way stories get passed on. And then once we did a little screening in the school, sure, all the rest of them will pick up on it. And then the stories just grow and they grow their own legs.
It's lovely and innocent, even though it's only 20 years ago. And some, you think it's from many years ago. I wonder, has social media made them wise to microphones and being recorded, that they mightn't be as kind of given if you went to record to people now in 2025?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I we were always of the mind to make that camera disappear. So I started using the camera about 25 years ago. Now, the traditional folklorists and all them, all they'd be giving out to me, saying, "Oh, no one will talk in front of a camera." And I said, "Listen, if you can make that camera disappear, look someone in the eye and someone will talk to you." And they did. Now, the question which you raised, you'd wonder now, we're going back recording in the next couple of weeks, back in the same schools in the same areas. Uh-huh. So it'll be interesting. Now, in me gut, I have a gut feeling that the stories are still there. I know that I trusted that they're still there. But I'd say maybe other parts of the country, they mightn't be there as much, you know, because people are getting their stories through phones and they're quicker and they're faster. But the idea of definitely talking, and even the little ones talking, little lads talking. I always mention this. I remember one young lad told me a story about his uncle, and I was sitting down to edit it, and it was about 45 seconds long. And I met the mother maybe a couple of weeks later, and I asked her, I said, "The young lad was telling me a story about the uncle." "Oh, yeah." And she told me it in the lovely Limerick accent. And she paused and rose and fell in the exact same way as the young lad. So he'd literally heard that from her, like a piece of tune or a fiddle tune, and copied her word for word, and where the silences were, like accents. You know better than that than anyone.
Passing on the oral history. Yeah, exactly. But the cadence, everything was the same in the same point of the story.
Yeah.
It meant there was a talent for storytelling in the family as well.
Absolutely. I think that's in us. It's in us still as a people. I think that there's something in the ground that's kind of just seeps up, I think.
There were great photographs of the screening you did when you did the film. Tell us where that took place.
I should have talked where I'm at, Oliver, I'll be honest with you. Myself and Aileen. And I suppose this was different. Like, I'm back here. I'm folklorist now, we've been introduced as, but my background is arts. And you'd have a couple of different slashes after your name, depending on what job, where you're working, right? Just the nature of your work. But I suppose that art sensibility was there. We always had the idea that we never owned the stories. The stories belonged to the people of Limerick. They belonged to the young lads. And I did not want to take them stories and put them on a library shelf for academics to ponder and question and pull apart. The stories were about getting back to the ground in Limerick. So we actually, one of the big stories was the story that the Banshee lived in the handball alley, and if you touch, it was a classic 1930s handball alley, I'd say it was, in the middle of a park by the Shannon, and all the young lads were told not to go there. So they said, if you touch the four corners and say the Hail Mary backwards, she'll come after you, the Banshee will come after you. And they all had that story. And obviously the mammies and daddies invented it to keep them miles away from it. But we did
and the scorch marks all around the handball alley. I mean, it was obviously a hangout place. That's why parents didn't want their kids hanging out there.
Absolutely.
The gangs of kids were just hanging around.
100%.
But that's where you do the screening.
We did a screening, and as I said, people thought we were mad, but it was absolutely gorgeous. A cool March night. Got a marquee in, got rid of all the big bad lads.
So there was never a marquee.
There was never one since.
And screened it against the wall.
Screened it against the wall, and sure, the young lads all turned up, and buses turned up, and people from the other part of... See, the thing is, we didn't realise it as well, being from rural Wexford. Even different part, the other part of the city, sure, they were like a foreign land to them, you know. The boys in Ballinanty to come into St Mary's Park was a different space, you know.
That's but it
was
a lovely way to Mary's Park, is yeah. And is it still there?
God, no, that's a good question.
You'll find out. I'll find out this weekend. Yeah. Where's the screening happening?
We're taking place. There's a great organisation, a woman called Monica Spencer, called the GAF. It's in Limerick City, and there's space is still available if you want to go to the screening. We would love to see all the participants there if we could.
Come up in the world.
Yeah.
Handball into a proper place of screening. The cover of the DVD which you put out, and we sold quite a couple of hundred copies, I think, down in...
No, we gave them out.
Yeah,
we just gave them out. That was the thing with us, with the idea of ownership. We never, like, only in the last couple of years, I'm selling stuff. Someone said, you need to cop onto yourself and make a bit of a living for yourself for that.
But no, our arts project.
Exactly.
You handled it. Give it away.
We had about 500 copies of the DVD, and that was before social media. And all the mammies and daddies and all got copies. And we reprinted it again, actually, because I'm looking at the DVD cover now. And there was a little boy in front of it called Stuart O'Connell. And we'd recorded September to March that 2004 and 5. And little lad died a couple of months afterwards. But he was on the cover.
Desperate.
It broke our hearts.
What happened to him?
As far as I know, the poor little creator got an asthma attack, as far as I know, but I stand corrected in that. But he was one of them children. He was just beaming. It was like a little star. And anytime we were in recording at schools, he was there and smiling. And his voice is still in the stories. So I suppose, compared to me, like 20 years has passed. We've our own children now. These are all adults now. So there's a...
Well, there's an anniversary coming up for that family, because it is 20 years ago.
Yeah. When we actually... You wouldn't believe it. When we actually just... Only about a week and a half ago, we decided we'd launched the project. We were going to do the screening. And someone contacted me and said that was the little lad's birthday. The day we launched it. So we couldn't believe it. But it's a lovely... Come here, it's a lovely... And I've been talking to his mammy over the years ago and only recently. And we found loads of old photographs we took in the school, and we gave them to her.
Wow.
So it'll be lovely. And even some of the people you have on here to talk. Sure, I was only editing up the videos yesterday of Tory, and I couldn't believe him. Just to see someone 20 years later, you know.
Yeah.
And look me in the eye as an adult.
Late 20s, early 30s now. Yeah. Because all these, we'll hear some of the stories of the kids. This is the scary toilet story. Isn't this? But it kind of speaks for itself.
Toilet, he went to sleep over, it kept on going on. And the tap kept on going on after it. And my brother said, woke him up and said, your toilet won't stop flushing. And he said, no, we're getting the priest in to bless it tomorrow. And they phoned the plumber before they got the priest, and the plumber said, no, there's nothing wrong with the toilet. The priest came, he blessed it. The toilet flushed again that night, and the devil came up and caught everyone in the family.
Did he just say, no, the accents can be hard to understand?
Yeah.
Did you have to draw them out, by the way? You weren't specifically asked them what's the story you've heard?
Yeah, and it was kind of loose enough now. We'd have a camera set up, and you'd be just saying, you might hear the kind of classic ones, or the banshee things, or good luck, bad luck. Like, there's loads of little things, like if you see one magpie, you know, everyone around the country would be spitting and blessing, or if they're walking down the street, this is the urban ones we didn't have. If you're walking down the street, two little lads holding their hands, you'd never split a pole because it'd break up your friendship. And one little one had
What did they do about the magpies in Limerick? Did they have a special way?
I think there was the waving at them, and sometimes it could have been spitting, you know, if you see. Yeah,
spitting
your hands, you clamp your hands, one. Yeah. The first magpies
stepping on cracks. And the footpath as well was another one.
That was a lovely one. If you step on a crack, you break your mother's back, you know.
They all said that if you step on a crack, you break your mother's back, but no one believe it.
I don't believe, because you can't just break your mother's back without her doing herself an injury.
Yeah, if you step on a crack, that's nothing. Who believe if you step on a crack, you break your mother's back? That's nonsense.
I stood on a crack once and my mother's back got injured over work.
I stepped on crap, my mother's back didn't break.
It's so deadpan and serious as well, isn't it? The title, the story from the title is The Banshee in the Handball Alley.
Yeah.
And there are two little girls talking about the Banshee. We'll have a listen to them.
The Banshee lives in the Handball Alley and she has all grey hair and she wears kind of black and grey kind of clothes.
It's like all a tour, but not just like it's all a tour.
And it's all rags. And she's grey hair and she's always brushing her hair. And if you ever hear her and don't look at her, just close the curtains or do go somewhere where you can't see her because she'll throw the comb at you and she'll make you blind. Well, if you tip the four corners of the Handball Alley at night, at 12 o'clock at night, it can't be 1 minute past 12, it has to be bang on 12 o'clock. And if you tip the four corners of it, loads of bats will come flying out.
And that is the reason for the name, The Banshee and the Handball Alley. The Banshee lives in the Handball Alley is the name of the DVD. The two little girls in that clip, Tori and Lisa, they're on the phone. Good morning to you girls.
Good morning. How are you?
How are you doing? I come to Tori first of all. Tori, what class were you in when Michael came to St Mary's and recorded those stories?
Fifth class.
And where in the world or what do you do in your life now?
I'm a primary school principal in County Clare.
In Shannon, to be specific.
Yes.
So you never left school.
Never left school. I finished in Mary Eye. I actually taught in St Mary's. I know Lisa's there now. Taught in St Mary's, was deputy in St Mary's, and then took principalship in Shannon. So was hard to leave, but yeah, when you look back at the video, it brings back even just listening to it, you can tell the people that are speaking, you know they're your classmates, like, you know, it's
is that
lovely.
Right? You remember exactly. And yeah. Lisa, good morning to you.
Morning, Oliver, how are you?
Not so bad. You literally never left St Mary's.
Never left. It's lovely to be back. It is, yeah, it's nice to be back working in the school.
Sorry to take you out of class. But
no,
these are great memories.
It is, and it's like I have so many good memories growing up and going to St Mary's, so it's nice to be able to come back and be part of the memories in the kids' lives, and it's really nice, it is. And it's such a happy school to work in.
And Lisa, do you remember where you would have got the ghost stories, these kind of scary stories that you were telling Michael and Aileen back in the day?
I was trying to remember. I remember we used to go to Scouts. I think Tori was actually in Scouts at me.
Oh, yeah.
And we used to go camping on the weekends and we'd tell each other ghost stories. I think a lot of them kind of came from that. And I remember my grandfather lived in the Castle Barracks. It was on the grounds of King John's Castle. There were 16 houses.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually knocked now. And when I was young, he was telling me loads of stories about when they were young growing up in the castle and the Banshee and the Handball Alley. And there was loads of stories. And from our classmates, I think it was a thing in school as well. We used to have little chats about it.
It's just an amazing story. Do you have kids yourself, Lisa, nowadays?
I have two little girls, yeah.
Do you think they know any of these stories around Limerick?
My eldest little girl is nearly 8 and I actually showed her the video. It was funny. She was watching it, but she didn't. She actually asked me who the Banshee was.
You were grateful for a moment.
She didn't know, yeah. Yeah.
Tori, over in Shannon, are you still seeing banshees and hearing about them?
No, definitely not. I don't know. I think it's, you know, because it's such a historic place, you know, it was a well-established, you know, housing estate. It was one of the first communities, I suppose, of Limerick City.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that, the old folklore, it stayed, it stuck. The same families lived there. They still live there. So
right.
The stories did get passed down. Like, I think in a lot of the places now, and particularly, I suppose, I've moved to West Clare, you know, there's been a lot of transients, a lot of move. Shannon has always had
right.
that transience that, you know, the stories unfortunately do get lost. But we are very lucky, I was saying to your colleague yesterday, that, like, it has been the same families in those parishes for many, many years. And it's lovely to see that the stories are still there for the families that live there. And as Michael was saying, like, he does believe the stories are still there when he goes back, and I would think the same, because it is the same families that are there.
He's going to find out, I suppose. You kind of do expect the stories there, Michael, don't you?
100% exactly agree with what Tori and Lisa just said. Yeah, absolutely, they're in the families and just passed down, and they'll never leave the people. And once you tell a child a story, that story will stay with them until the day to go.
Tory, the story of the, is it the Green Lady? That's, it's specific to Limerick, is it? Because it was on, was it on the bridge? Or something to do with it?
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the Bishop's Lady, but the Green Lady was, I suppose there's a green, there is a green swamp on the riverbank that goes around St Mary's Park. It was definitely something we were told to keep us out of the water, because that's where we played. We cycled to the bank, we walked to the bank. You know, we hung ropes off the trees, and that's where we played. It was definitely something that was made up to keep us out of the water, to keep us safe. But we truly believed that a green lady lived in the green swamp and that we could not go into the water.
They're very useful cautionary tales to keep you away from harm. And Lisa, maybe you can come in here with us. The kids gallivanted a little bit more in your day than they probably do now.
Yeah, I think now it's a little, like, it's a little bit more kind of, kids are kind of kept in more, and I suppose there's more kind of technology and things like that. But what I see in working in the school, kids do still go out around the area and play, and it's nice to see. You'll see kids cycling to school and they're cycling home, and when they're coming into school, they're chatting about their playing outside of school and stuff like that. So I think there is a little, they do still go out to play.
Okay, so you're giving us a bit of hope.
Yeah.
That the character and the culture remains alive. Thanks a million to you both. We'll let you back to class. That's Tori and Lisa in Shannon and in St Mary's as well, where the whole thing began. And Michael, the screening of The Banshee Lives in the Handball Alley is on the 22nd of March. That's on Saturday, isn't it? Saturday from 12 until half one in The Gaff on Lord Edward Street in Limerick City. No better place.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's still a few places left, so go to The Gaff and the Eventbrite and book your spot, and we'd love to see you there and participants there.
I hope you still find the yarns.
Ooh, do we?
Thanks. Michael Fortune, thanks so much.